Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon, presented by TeeOff.com by the PGA Tour. I am your host, Shane Bacon, and it is Open Week, British Open Week, Open Championship Week. You can really call it whatever you want. I am not going to yell at you about that. And if you don't want to travel all the way to Scotland to play a course like Carnoustie, you and your golf buddies can book a tee time at Chambers Bay Golf Club and experience the thrills of a links-style course right here in the United States. And if Seattle isn't in your near-term plans, know that you can book your next round at one of the thousands of other great golf courses across the country on TeeOff.com by the PGA Tour, the official tee time reservation site of the PGA Tour, and you can do so without booking fees. That's right, no booking fees, every course, every tee time. Plus, as a valued listener of this here Clubhouse podcast, you'll get to save an additional 25% on deal times with a single-use promo code TeeOffBacon. That's on teeoff.com. Check that out. And yes, it is open week. I will unfortunately not be in Scotland because we at Fox have the unique opportunity to bring you a little afternoon golf after you finish up watching the Open in the morning. The U.S. Junior Amateur will be on FS1. The semifinals are Friday, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern. The championship is on Saturday, 1 to 4 p.m. Eastern. So make sure you check that out once you wrap up with your Open Championship viewing, because it's going to be great stuff. These young kids get just better and better, and it really looks like you're watching professional golf when you watch this. And it's at Baltusrol, of course, a major championship venue. So headed out that way tomorrow, and we'll be there for the week and the weekend, and then Sunday morning I'll be able to get up after we wrap up the championship on Saturday and check in with Carnoustie, which looks extremely dried out, which is awesome, very brown, which is awesome, and the greens look like they're in unbelievable shape. So it's going to be a fun one. I think the conditions bring in a lot more players. I think you're going to hear a lot of people talk about Tiger Woods. I talked about that with Brad Faxon, the guest this week, just about what type of player can benefit from conditions like this. So it should be a lot of fun. The Open is one of the most fun viewing weekends of the entire year, just because you get to get up super early and, you know, get the coffee brewing and lay on the couch and watch golf. And then you get to go play golf in the afternoon. That is, after you watch the U.S. Junior Amateur on the FS1. See, I am such a business guy. Do you hear that? That was I didn't even miss a beat. And before we get to Brad, I just wanted to let you know that when it comes to golf equipment, we always want the newest driver, of course. We always want a golf ball that goes 5 yards further. We want the best shoes in the world. The one thing that doesn't seem to get the right attention is something you use on every shot, the thing that holds and protects those expensive golf clubs, and it's an essential part of your on-course fashion. That's your golf bag. And if you haven't changed your bag in 5 or 10 years, treat yourself to an upgrade today with the Ogio Cirrus bag. It's fully loaded with all the features you want in a golf bag, yet it's still remarkably light. You can carry it effortlessly while also protecting those brand new clubs. It's complete with a water-resistant pocket for your valuables and the rapid access pocket, making it quick and easy to get a new ball after you send one into the backyard. If you do that, I'm sure you never, ever do that, check out Ogio.com or your local golf retailer to get your hands on the Cirrus today. So stop carrying around a bad golf bag. Get yourself a brand new bag. Upgrade Ogio, the world's best bags. All right, to my summer best friend. That's what I'm calling him. My best buddy of the summer, a guy that I spend more time with than my wife, Brad Faxon, up next. And we welcome back into the clubhouse a man that has avoided my request to quote-unquote pot it up. That's why you get so annoyed, is it's the way I reference it, Brad Faxon. You hate the way that I say pot it up.
I love pot it up.
Oh, come on.
I just never, you know, you're such a millennial, you know. I don't have that vernacular in my vocabulary, but I'm going to start using it. Maybe people will think I'm cooler. Maybe I can get some more contacts that way.
Yeah, so you and I have spent basically the entire summer together, and I hate to even bother you on a day that that we're not having to work together, but I appreciate you coming on. You know, I love chatting with you about kind of golf courses, because you and I are both kind of golf course nerds, for goodness sakes. We just got a chance to do the U.S. Senior Women's Open at Chicago Golf Club, and we were basically salivating the entire broadcast. But when you look at pictures of what we're going to see this week at the Open Championship, you're seeing a golf course that, A, is a historic Open Championship golf course, but it looks the way that if you were going to close your eyes and think about an open venue, it looks exactly like you'd think. It's burnout. The fairways look like they're going to run forever, but the greens are still in good shape. And, you know, for people like you and I, it's going to be an exciting week to watch because it feels very much like a real Open.
Yeah, Shane, you're right. It feels and it looks. It looks like burned out, no control over the golf ball when it lands, you know, a lot of rub of the green bouncing. And Carnoustie, or is affectionately known by many of the players as Carnasty, when the Open was there in 99, you know, Paul Laurie somehow managed to win that thing at a mere 7 over par. You know, rough was 8 feet high. And then the finish by John Vandeveld. People remember those two Opens there. But I'll tell you what, we played the senior British Open there a couple of years ago. And, you know, I've played Carnoustie in the Dunhill Links Championship. It's a fabulous golf course until the last couple holes. And then it's very, I would say, out of character for what we think of Lynx golf and British golf, with these creek beds that run through those two holes. But nevertheless, those two holes are impossible too. But I it's one of my favorite courses. And I say my favorite story is when Ben Hogan came over to play his one and only British Open, he played at Carnoustie and ended up winning that event to win the first three majors of 1953, and then couldn't get back in time to play the PGA Championship to win the Grand Slam because he took the boat back and it wouldn't get back in time.
You don't take the boat anymore, you're telling me? That's not an option?
No, I don't want to be on the QE2. But it's just there's so much great history there. The course, you're going to have a little bit of everything here. And I love the RNA's approach to the Open Championship is unlike what we expected a U.S. Open for par to be the score, the winning score around par. I think the USGA has a different mentality to the RNA. The RNA is so dependent on weather. And, you know, they've made courses difficult. Turnberry in 86 when Norman won. Muirfield, when Els won, had very, very high rough. I remember hitting the right rough there, and it was over my belt high. Obviously, Carnoustie in 99. It can be as difficult as they want it to be, but it's fun when it's fast, you know, when it's narrow and when the wind blows. So the RNA hopes to have some wind. It looks like the forecast is for some steady, warmish weather for over there, high 60s, nothing crazy, but as you know, it changes in a minute.
Yeah, I want to get into kind of a couple of names and predictions, and of course we'll talk a little Tiger there as well. But I wanted to ask you, because I know you've got some interesting stories across the pond in your career, what was your first introduction to Lynx golf, not in America, if you will, but Lynx golf, you know, in Scotland and England and Ireland?
First time I ever played in England was in the 1983 Walker Cup at Royal Liverpool, or Hoylake, as we called it. And it was the first time I crossed the Atlantic, and that hotbed of golf, Royal Liverpool, Lytham and St. Anne's, Birkdale, you know, they're all tied in there within a half an hour's drive of each other, and some other great qualifying courses. But I think what blew me away was, well, there were two things that blew me away. The playing the game part that blew me away was how irrelevant yardage was. And what I mean by that, Shane, you've played over there to know that you could be in a situation where you might be in the rough downwind from 200 yards and hit a 9-iron, and it just bounces and bounces and bounces. And then you could have a shot from 130 yards. It could be a 4-iron and might not be enough. So I love the old school mentality, even with new technology and new equipment, of having to think about a trajectory rather than what club and what yardage. You know, it's really about containing and controlling the golf ball.
Yeah, and I mean, so many people talk about you being a great putter. I know that that's something that's followed you around your entire career, but I don't think you've ever really gotten the credit. This is a compliment you're getting, by the way. I don't think you've ever gotten the credit for being such a great pitcher. I mean, your ability to get the ball up and down from around the greens is something that a lot of the people that played golf with you throughout your professional career talk about. You had to have loved being over there just simply because you could be so creative around the greens, not just with these approaches that you're talking about, but just, you know, looking at a pitch shot, knowing there's 12 ways to play it. We saw a little of that at Shinnecock, but you're going to see a lot more of that at Carnoustie, I'm sure.
Yes, and it's a different kind of chipping and pitching. You'll see a lot more guys bouncing the ball along the ground, putting from farther away because it's so baked out and dry. And you'll see less 60-degree wedges used for pitching. You know, you might see, you know, the odd pot bunker shot around a green where a guy's taking a 60 out or has to get a lob shot over one of those bunkers. But you know, the greens at Carnoustie have a lot of slope to them. There's a lot of rough around the greens. So finding a fairway, you know, like everywhere you play, if you can find the fairway, find the greens, you're going to be a big advantage. And the start at Carnoustie, I mean, the holes are so different. You have holes where you got to draw it. You got holes where you got to fade it. You got long par fours, sharp par fours. You got holes that go into the wind and against the wind. And it comes at you in the first four or five holes. They turn every different way. And then when you get to the par five, six, that famous hole where Hogan took it down the left side between the bunkers and the OB, where most players lay it out to the right now, there's so much choice. And, you know, you and I would have a battle to see who has the most great logos and who has played the most top 100 courses. And I bet if we sat in a room and had a beer and just said, okay, what are your favorite courses? Those courses have so much choice and so much option. And that's what you'll see at Carnoustie.
So do you feel like a lot of the things we're hearing from the players is that driver is going to be out of these guys' hands. And you already mentioned Hoylake. If you had a dollar for every time somebody says Hoylake this week, you're not going to have to retire and never have to worry about working on the broadcast team anymore. But it's going to be brought up a lot. It's going to look like when Tiger won, when he hit one driver all week long. We've heard Phil Mickelson say he might not have a driver in the bag. Tiger said today he feels like this is his best chance ever. Does this eliminate distance? And when I say that, does this eliminate the bombers and allow basically everyone that's a medium distance, short distance hitter to contend this week if they play well around the greens?
Absolutely. And you know, when Tiger won there and McIlroy won at Hoylake, they did it in different ways, but they weren't hitting driver in every hole for sure. And it's not that you can't, but you have to be precise. And, you know, it's amazing that you could have a bunker that's, you know, 7 yards by 7 yards wide, and it seems like you hit a ball that's 10 yards left or right of it, and they all end up in that bunker. For some reason, the way that the design works, balls end up kicking to those bunkers, which, as you know, are death on the golf course. It's like a hazard. You got to hit it out sideways. So you can play a strategy that takes all that out of play, but then you got to really play some controlled iron shots. And if it gets windy, it'll be fun to watch what these players are going to have to do.
I want to take just a moment to talk about how hard it is to hire people. Hiring people is brutal. It's nearly impossible. Getting hired, also not easy. That is, unless you use ZipRecruiter.com/theclubhouse. Applications come in. ZipRecruiters analyze each one. They spotlight the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective. It is so effective that, get this, 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. Nothing happens that fast anymore in this world. One day with results like that, it's no wonder the ZipRecruiter is the highest rated hiring site in America. And right now, for my listeners, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/clubhouse. That's ZipRecruiter.com/clubhouse. C-L-U-B-H-O-U-S-E. Nailed it. ZipRecruiter.com/clubhouse. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Now let's get back to Mr. Faxon. Do you believe that this is Tiger's best chance? Not just this week, but the Open Championship in general. Do you feel like this is Tiger's best chance to contend, considering he can look at holes green back to the tee, he can use strategy, he can hit a lot of those long irons? Do you feel like going forward, and focus is always around Tiger Woods, that this is the best major he's going to have to win?
Well, it depends. Are you talking about this year and the next few years that he plays? I mean, he seems to be getting back and stronger and contending in different ways now. You know, we used to see Tiger win by driving it far, hitting great approach shots and putting like nobody's ever putted before. And now, you know, we see him contend by having one of those three things working, but never all three things working. So he needs to find a way to ramp up the consistency. I love Chambly's comment that when he went around Carnoustie yesterday, it'll be the best chance Tiger has to win because he doesn't have to draw the ball. And there were only two holes that he has to draw the ball. And I'm pretty sure if that's the case, if Chambly's accurate, those will be 3-wood or 2-iron holes for him.
Yeah, it's just, you know, the comments we're getting from Carnoustie's crazy. I mean, these guys are hitting 430-yard drives. We saw it a little bit last week at the Scottish Open. Ricky was hitting 450-yard drives. And it's going to take... I don't think patience is the right word. I just think a game plan. Whoever has the game plan that I feel like works the best, not for Thursday, not for Friday, but for all 4 days. And I wonder if you have to look at a guy that's really, really smart when, you know, the guns go off. I mean, I know Jordan Spieth struggled this year with his game, and I know if he doesn't win this week, it's going to be the first calendar year that he hasn't won since he was like a kid, if ever. But you think about a Jordan Spieth, and you think about a guy that has definitely, I would say, you know, taken a bigger leap than most of these young guys as somebody that can outthink a golf course.
No doubt. And the variable is going to be the wind and the wind direction, strength of wind and where it blows from. And experience always makes a big difference if you've played the course in these different conditions. But there are some players in Spieth you named. I would put Justin Rose in that category of guys that know how to be precision-like or machine-like when they play, but still have a knack. They have the ability to find a way when they're off a little bit to get the ball up and down or get it in the fairway with enough length or enough pop. And you know, that's why Tiger's got a chance here. And there's something about, I would maybe should have said this earlier in the show, there's a spirit that comes out when you go over to play in Scotland. And I think you throw away the rules. And I don't mean the rules of golf, but the rules of what you normally do. And you know, you're hitting shots to avoid pot bunkers, to leave yourself longer approaches because you know they're dead, or else you're getting up and hitting a 400-yard drive so that you can have a 200-yard 8-iron to a 600-yard par 5. There's so many – or else you'll play on number 6, you'll play with 3-iron, 5-iron, 7-iron, and walk away with the best par of your life. So there's going to be so many different options, so many different choices out there that a player, and you said you don't like the word patience. Maybe it's persistence. You've got to have something that keeps your nose to the grindstone here and realize that this isn't a normal Open Championship. Carnoustie is different. And then it's going to make you hit some shots, and especially these last three holes, 17 and 18, two tough par fours that are parallel to each other in different directions. One of them is always amazingly difficult. So it'll be interesting to see what wind comes up at Carnoustie and what type of player or players can do the best there.
You know, I'm not sure I've ever played a golf course for the first time when I first played Carnoustie, where I stood on the tee on, I would say, 3, 4, maybe 5 holes. You mentioned 17. This is the best example of it. And had no clue where to go. Like, stand on 17T for the first time, I had no idea where the fairway was. I mean, you know, I think 17's tougher than 18, you know, 10 times out of 10, unless the wind's right behind you. But, you know, I was watching the Sergio Podrick Open the other day, they had it on Golf Channel, and, you know, you're hitting long iron, it's like you said, it's a completely different strategy, and you have to commit to it, and then you've got to go out there and hit the golf shots. And so, you know, you can stand on 16T, 2, 3, 4, 5 under par and feel pretty good about yourself, and you can walk off shooting even very, very easy. I mean, it has to be the toughest three-hole stretch that you finish in just about any major championship, right?
No, I agree with you 100%. You know, that I'd love to see by the end of the week what the percentage of greens hit on 16 are, especially when that tee's way back there. It's 220 yards. It's a complete inverted saucer. It's a Donald Ross styled green, not a Donald Ross green, but the style where it's high in the middle and it runs off on all the sides. If you're going to land it short, it's got to be just a perfectly placed and shaped shot. And it goes off far enough that there's never an easy pitch or chip or whatever it is that you're going to hit. And then 17, you know, if it's downwind, yeah, sure, it's a shorter tee shot, but you got to keep it short of that burn that crosses, and it's never in a situation where guys are going to drive it across that burn. For some reason, the founders of the game figured out that tee shot. And, you know, if it is downwind, God bless you, because when you play 18, you're going to see the toughest shot. Yeah, that 18th hole, you know, you cut the ball as a lefty, I draw it as a righty. You can land a shot on the 18th green and have it go out of bounds left of the green. It's the damnedest thing I've ever seen. And never mind the creek you get across, the OB on the left, the ghost of John Vandeveld. I mean, I can't wait to sit down and watch this event.
Yeah, you know, you think of Vandeveld, and his name always comes up. Of course it does. I mean, he makes triple on the last and loses in a playoff, and will forever, yep. in 100 years from now, if you're alive in 100 years, you'll remember him standing in the burn, you know, with his pants rolled up. It's an image that is forever burned in the golfer's memory. But you forget,
right.
You know, Sergio bogeys 18, Padraig Harrington doubles 18. I mean, these are the guys that are contending to win this Open Championship, and they're playing it multiple over par on that final day. I mean, it's not just Vandeveld that struggled with it. And I loved on Twitter last week, Scott Van Pelt chimed in. I was talking a little bit about, you know, they were showing a special on Golf Channel about Vandeveld, and I said, I'm not sure I can watch it because it still just it just pains me, you know, when you see somebody like that melt down. And he says, you know, he got one of the worst breaks of all time, Vandeveld did, and everybody forgets that. But, you know, I know you didn't play in that Open in 99. I don't know if you were watching it or if you were at the edge of your seat, but I remember where I was during that whole thing. And as you said, it's something that is so burned in the memory of golfers that any professional on that tee, you'd have to have a 7-shot lead to feel comfortable there, right?
No, oh, no doubt. It, you know, maybe it's so easy after, you know, watching what happened to Vandeveld to say, why don't you just play 6-iron, 6-iron,
right.
6-iron? And by the way, you could have hit the 6-iron in the creek. You could hit the next 6-iron in the bunker. You could hit the next 6-iron out of bounds. But Vandeveld, you know, pulls driver out, and it would have been an easy decision to go wedge. But you know, he's 210 yards. All he had to do was hit it over the creek. In the grandstands, he gets a drop in front of him. It's an easy six if he hits it in the grandstands, which he did. But it somehow caroms and ricochets back over the creek. Even if it went in the creek, it's a better shot, a better break. And I was, you know, thinking about where you were. I was actually in a car driving. I had a broken wrist, so I didn't get to play that one. I had landed somewhere, and I was in an airplane, and I was calling Brett Quigley's dad, Paul. Paul is so consistent because he's always watching golf, and he would be the great announcer like Brett is. And he was giving me the play-by-play of what Vandeveld was doing. I had to stop the car. It was riveting.
You're going, wait a minute, he's in the burn? What is he doing? Just take a drop. I mean, I think everybody's just sitting there, was just staring at the TV with their hands out going, what is happening? You just hope it doesn't happen again, for goodness sakes. Just don't happen to anyone this week. We don't want to see it. The train wreck is only fun once every 20 years. I was going to ask you a little bit, as I know, Brett, I know you've worked with some players with their putting lately. I don't want to get in, you know, specifics with certain players, but I did want to ask you about your philosophy. When you talk to players, and you've worked with some of the best players in the world the last few months, in the last couple of years, is it a philosophy you try to teach them, or are you actually working on mechanics?
Well, there's always both. And it's up to the individual, you know, and the coach to figure out what's the blend for each person. There's no cookie cutter to putting. And to me, I've seen guys that have awkward strokes be great putters, and guys with beautiful looking setups and beautiful looking mechanics be poor putters. And there's no part of the game that tests a player more than the putter does. And I would much rather be a confident putter than any other part of the game, because it drives you crazy. And the worst thing is when people tell, let's call it Billy Ray Brown or Steve Elkington or whoever might be the greatest swinger of the golf club, oh, you should win every tournament with your swing. And then they put more pressure on themselves to putt better. You know, when players hit the ball well, they don't seem to make as many birdie putts as they do par putts. And there's a psychology to that and why. So I always try and ask the player, what is it they've felt the best at when they've putted their best? You know, do they have thoughts? What are the thoughts? Are they feels? Can you see shapes, colors, stripes? What do you see when you're out there? What are your senses like? You know, you've got to really get inside a player. And, you know, there are times when they're completely lost, Shane, where they have 10, 15 swing thoughts, stroke thoughts, where you got to say, okay, I've got to find a way to get this guy back to ground zero where he has just one. And it takes time, and it takes thoughtfulness. And I'm a believer that you don't have to be perfect to putt. You know, there's too many guys, I think, that want to make sure that putter face is aimed perfectly at address. They want to make sure that ball starts directly on the line every single time. And I'm not that guy. I believe there's a lot of different ways that ball can go in the hole. The ball is much smaller than the cup. You can pull or push a shot and a putt and still have them go in. And there's guys that were wristy strokers, there were shoulder strokers, there were arm strokers, and now the way that players hold on to the putter, I mean, I don't even think that the conventional right hand low grip for a right handed player is the most popular grip. And if it is, it's not by much. So for somebody to come up with a statement that says, well, this is all you have to do, this is what putting takes, I've been around too long. And I think I'm proudest as a player and a guy that had a reputation for being a good putter to have been able to do it for decades.
Right.
And I say that humbly. I don't say that with any kind of ego, because I worked my tail off at becoming a better putter. I spent a lot of time with Scotty Cameron in the Scotty Cameron studio, looking at strokes, different strokes, how a ball leaves the putter, and talking to players. Well, how do they think? What are they thinking about? So, the hardest question and the most often asked question I get is, can you just give me one thing? What's the one thing? And I'm like, God, I wish I had that one thing I could, put in a jar and put it on the shelf at CVS and you could just go buy this one thing that would help everybody. We'd all be better off.
Is this the easiest major for a bad putter to win at?
Oh, well, that's a great question. To me, the hardest greens to putt were always the flattest greens to putt.
Okay.
And I remember going to Bethpage Black in early 2002, I think. And a lot of people that were familiar with the golf course said, oh, you're going to play great there. These greens are so simple. Every putt's a straight putt. And what they meant by that was you didn't have to play a lot of break. And I thought they were the most difficult holes to read, greens to read. And I'd much prefer to putt greens that had a lot of obvious slope, like Augusta National or Shinnecock, where you knew that there was a lot of break, but it was obvious what that break was. So straighter putts were tougher to me. Most of the times, the British Open, Rota, they have tamer greens or a little bit slower greens. And I think slower greens test the quality of the player's stroke, too, because you have to be, you have to take a longer stroke. The face is opening and closing more. So slower greens and flatter greens were always the most difficult, in my opinion.
Just want to take one more break to remind you that if you're not going to Scotland, a shorter flight, an easier flight, is to go with your buddies to Chambers Bay, host of the 2015 U.S. Open Championship, and experience the thrill of links-style course right here in the United States. And if Seattle isn't in your near-term plans, know that you can book your next round at one of thousands of other great golf courses across the country on teeoff.com by the PGA Tour, the official tee time reservation site of the PGA Tour. And you can do so without booking fees. That's right, no booking fees. Every course, every tee time. Plus, as a valued listener of the clubhouse, you'll get to save an additional 25% on deal times with the single-use promo code TEEOFFBACON. That's at teeoff.com. Now let's get back to Mr. Faxon. All right, I need your pick. I know, for goodness sakes, I know how you do this normally. You normally give me like seven people. I need one person, Brad, just one, that you think will walk away with the Claret Jug. And I know picking is a little silly for any of these major championships, but, somebody that I think you feel like has a really, really good chance.
I think I'm going to be very happy picking Dustin Johnson.
Okay.
He's played well in British Opens. He's knocking on the door. Like you said, if it's true that you don't have to be the best putter in the world, I think he's a confident putter right now. I think he's been able to keep it uncomplicated. He would be a guy that I would put up, and I'd be very surprised if he's not at least in contention.
Yeah, I mean, it's silly.
That's one guy, Shane.
That's just one guy. I'm impressed. You picked the number one player in the world. Way to go on that. But, I mean, he is the guy that I think you have to look at as somebody that's coming in with, as you mentioned, all of the tools for this type of thing. And it's going to be, to me, it's going to be kind of a second shot pitching kind of golf course. And it's very much a part of his game that he's improved on. So would you say, for people out there that are looking at their pools and they're looking at the guys to pick and they're itching to pick Tiger, what do you say to those people? Do you think Tiger's got a top 10 in him, a top 5 in him? Do you think that he legitimately can win this?
Yes. to all of them. I think that Carnoustie, of all the open courses I played, it kind of can tell you what shot you want to hit. But that being said, if he's not confident off the tee, and I remember him hitting, I believe, on the first tee shot, his iron out of bounds, not out of bounds, but into the burn on the left. If he's not comfortable off the tee, and we've seen that with him, you know, he's been a little erratic this year with his game. He's had, you know, stints where he looks like Tiger Woods. And then he's had stints where you're going, who is this guy?
It's definitely been kind of a roll of the die. Of course, you and I were calling the U.S. Open, and he comes out of the first hole and makes triple, and we're going, oh, goodness. It was actually funny. I mean, funny for us. You and I had filmed something for Titleist, and we did these little segments, these complete performance segments, and, you know, we were kind of trying to sneak around Shinnecock to do them and not disturb any of the players during their practice rounds. And it was late, I think it was Wednesday, and the first hole was clear, so we got a chance to do something on the first hole. And then we went to the green, and you were going to talk about pitching the ball and kind of the different options around Shinnecock. And you were like, this is a great place to do it. Long on one is a really, really bad spot. And you hit a few shots, and you know, we did a couple of takes of it. And you and I are calling action, and Tiger hit it almost exactly where we'd done the complete performance thing from. And you knew how hard that shot was.
Well, the green fell off, you know, a lot of the greens at Bethpage fell off on all sides. You know, the new architecture there, closely mown areas, were that was the buzzword in the first hole. When we Tiger was posing on that second shot, it was into the wind. That hole can be drivable, and you know he's looking at his 8-iron from 150 yards, and this thing just soared over the green down into some rough, exactly where we hit those shots in the little snippets for Titleist, and we knew that, hey, let's not be silly here. You've hit a bad shot. You're over the green. This is the first hole. Five's okay. Let's just get out of there. And then, you know, somehow he doesn't get his first shot. It rolls right back to his feet. And, you felt so bad for him because he didn't hit a shot. We watched that happen to Jordan Spieth on number 11.
Yeah, you get out of position. It was a perfect example of what U.S. Opens are about. It's like you get out of position by a foot, and you might have ruined your tournament chances or your championship chances. And we saw that with Spieth at 11, and we saw it with Tiger at 1. It's been a fun summer. We've got a chance to, I would say, knock out, in terms of broadcasting, some of the best courses that you'll ever see. And, I mean, last week was a great example of that. I mean, a chance to showcase Chicago Golf Club. You're a guy that loves the history of the game, and I know getting a chance to go there and do that was pretty special. I know it was special for me, but just to showcase a place like Chicago Golf Club, you know, that maybe most of the people that are watching have never seen even video of it.
You know, and that's one of the reasons, Shane, that there were so many spectators out there too. They obviously came to watch good golf from the senior women, but they wanted to be on the hallowed grounds of Chicago Golf. And, you know, we've talked about C.B. McDonald and Seth Rayner, this team that you could argue that they've built maybe the best course in the world at National Golf Links of America. And if you just went down the list of the golf courses, it's, you know, it's a who's who of courses and features. And they have these different templates of holes that they've copied. And we know these household words like Redan, Eden, Levin, Biarritz. You know, it's just, it's fun. And to watch these players try and figure out ways to hit even just short shots and get them somehow close to the green. I'll tell you what, Chicago Golf is that we got to go back there and play Shane.
It's so good. It's so good. It's just, you, that's the one thing, you know, I'm sure you get these questions too, but you know, I'll post a picture on Instagram or talk about it on Twitter or something when we first get there. And the most questions I get are, you know, how was it? You know, you get to play it, blah, blah, blah. And I say, you know, we really only play a media day at the U.S. Open. You know, our schedule's so busy, we don't really have time to do that. And those are the weeks where you walk off and you go, it's like 6 p.m. Maybe we could sneak out on the back end of this championship and get 18 holes in. And I know you'd be there as well. I know you'd tow the clubs out there as well when we get a chance to go around those types of places. And, you know, the schedule continues. You and I get to do the Junior Am at Baltusrol this week. And then we'll be at the Women's Am, and then the U.S. Amateur, which is at Pebble. So the kind of our great summer continues, and it's been a lot of fun. And of course, you and I kind of getting a new opportunity to do this teamed up with Joe and Paul on a lot of the championships has been a ton of fun. I know I've really enjoyed it, and you know, I hope it continues, because you know, I get to sit next to you, and as much crap as I give you, it's been a ton of fun.
Hey, I love being with you. There's nobody better in the business that cares more than you do. So I hope this pairing goes on for a long time.
So I will see you. I will see you at Baltusrol in a few days. Open obviously starts on Thursday. You heard it from Brad Faxon, and he's picking Dustin Johnson. I haven't decided who I am picking yet. I think I'm going to go with a European, but I haven't decided that yet. I've got to figure it out. But Brad, I appreciate you taking the time. I know you got to jump on a flight.
Hey, thanks so much.
And I will see you. I will see you later this week.
Thank you.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole. It's in the hole.
A big thanks to Brad for jumping on. I know he's very busy as our summer continues to roll on. We'll be at Baltusrol at the U.S. Junior Amateur. If you see us out there, make sure you say hello. And the Open rolls through this weekend. We'll have a new major champion or a repeat major champion come Sunday at Carnoustie. And just a reminder, when it comes to golf equipment, we always want a new driver. We always want a better golf ball. The one thing that never gets the right attention is the thing that holds and protects your clubs. It's an essential part of your on-course fashion. It's your golf bag. Treat yourself to an upgrade today with the Ogio Cirrus bag. Check that out at ogio.com or at your local golf retailer to get your hands on a Cirrus today. Stop carrying around a golf bag you've had since the 1990s. It's time for an upgrade, and that upgrade is at ogio.com, the world's best bags. Hope you guys enjoyed the pod. We'll be back next week as kind of the summer of golf rolls on for us at Fox and FS1. The schedule lightens up a little bit after Baltusrol, and then we get into the amateurs. Both the women's and the U.S. amateur are back-to-back. And then we're going to broadcast the mid-amateur as well. And then I will lay in a prone position on my couch for basically all of the end of September. We'll be back next week. Hope you guys enjoy the Open. Hope you enjoy the U.S. Junior Amateur. And we will chat with you. And if you get a chance, play a little golf on Sunday afternoon after the Open ends and make a couple of birdies.